This is the sixth day of this January 2018 Rohatsu 7-day session. And I'm going to take up something I've never done before in my 30-odd years of teaching, which is to read and comment on the Kensho account of Roshi Philip Kaplow. It's a long account. It's 21 pages. I can only read a fraction of it. I'm pulling out segments that I think, I hope, will be inspirational. They're segments that speak to the tremendous effort that's needed to close the gap to oneself in the practice, and also what trials he went through that none of us have had to go through on this journey. First, a little kind of preamble. He had been to the at the Nuremberg trials at the end of World War II, and then was posted to the Tokyo war crimes trials. And one day he had a day off from the trial recess, and he strolled through a temple there, a Zen temple, and it had a big impression on him. He didn't talk to anyone. He didn't know anything except it was called Zen. And then he sailed back to the United States and spent several years investigating academically this thing called Zen with D.T. Suzuki at Columbia University. He told me that when he went back to Japan after getting his fill of the study of it, he didn't even know there was such a thing as sitting. He thought that somehow he would just, through some kind of dialogues with the Roshi there, that enlightenment would be his. He'd heard plenty about enlightenment, but nothing about sitting. So this brings us to 1953, fall of 1953. He quit his business and just set sail, having no idea what awaited him. You can imagine the depth of need that would have him do this. Spoke no Japanese at all, had no friends. He had ever gone through Zen training or even Zen practice. He was just blindly going exactly where he needed to go. Carried by his faith mind, that there's something more. He had to find it. So he shows up with another American who didn't last long there, and they arrive at a temple where the priest was Nakagawa Roshi, and Nakagawa Roshi says, "Well, first go in the zendo and sit, and afterward we can talk if you'd like." And here I'm picking up Roshi Kaplow's words, "But we've never meditated in our lives. We wouldn't know how to sit cross-legged." And Nakagawa Roshi said, "You may sit any way you like, but you must not talk. The monk attendant will provide you with sitting cushions and show you where to sit. He will call you when I can see you again." And then here is his first experience. Sat, no, wriggled wordlessly for two miserable hours in dark hall next to Phillips. It's just a P, but I know it's Philip, Bernard Phillips. Next to Phillips, concentration impossible, thoughts chasing each other like a pack of monkeys, excruciating pain in legs, back, and neck. Desperately want to quit, but if I do before Phillips does, he'll never stop ragging me. Nor will the Roshi have a good opinion of American fortitude. At last, Monk came and mercifully whispered, you may see Roshi now. And at this point, it was 9:30. Hobbled into the Roshi's room to be greeted with his inscrutable smile and a large bowl of rice with pickles. He watched us intently while we gobbled down the food, then benignly asked, now, what would you like to know about Zen? We're so exhausted that we can only answer weakly, not a thing. then you better go to sleep now, because we get up at 3:30 in the morning. Pleasant dreams. And skipping a few paragraphs here, Roshi says, remember, this is still Nakagawa. He spent about 6 weeks with Nakagawa Roshi under his mentorship before Nakagawa handed him off to Harada Roshi at Hoshinji. Roshi says, I can meditate by myself in the founder's room instead of in the cold zendo. I can sit, kneel Japanese style, or use a chair and wear as much clothing as I please if I'm cold. This is an important point. Roshi Kaplow had some extraordinary metabolic issue where he was immensely sensitive to cold. How he managed to survive 13 years in Japan, where they don't have, at least not in the temples, they don't have central heating. And he says here, have no idea how to meditate, though. Can I compare this to how we introduce people to a full posture demonstration at workshops? When I told Roshi this, he cryptically advised, put your mind in the bottom of your belly. There's a blind Buddha there. Make him see. Is that all there is to meditation? Or is the Roshi deliberately letting me stew in my juice? This is now November 23rd, 1953. During tea with Roshi in his room today, he suddenly asked me, how would you like to attend the Rohatsu Sesshin at Harada Roshi's monastery? The discipline is especially severe during this Sesshin, but he is a famous Roshi, a much better teacher for you than I. And then Roshi replies, Kaplow, let's call him Kaplow at this point, he wasn't Roshi. If you think so, sure, why not? What could go wrong? And then Nakagawa continues, but my old teacher, whom you met the other day, is against it. He does not approve of Harada Roshi's harsh methods for inducing Satori. A Zen student, he thinks, should ripen slowly, then like fruit which falls from the tree when ripe, come naturally to enlightenment. Let me meditate further on it. So here, relating this to our own history here, these harsh methods are ones that we employed in the 1970s. Some of us thrived under them, but I came to feel that they just weren't suitable for most people in this country. And we changed to more, say, supportive. The stick is always supportive if you can take it that way. But the less frequent, less heavy use of the stick for the past, 30 years, 35 years here. And then Nakagawa says to him, how would you like to try the Koan Mu? And Roshi says, all right, if you think I should, but what do I do with it? And then Nakagawa said, you know its background, I suppose. Yes. then just keep concentrating on Joshu's answer, mu, until you intuitively realize its meaning. And then Roshi, will I then be enlightened? Nakagawa, yes, if your understanding is not just theoretical. But how do I concentrate? Put your mind in your hara and focus on nothing but mu. Roshi Kaplow himself used to say that when he went to Japan, all he wanted to do was grab Kensho and run. And you'll see that here very clearly, that a big part of his motivation was simple greed, just wanting to get this golden ring as he imagined it. But then, of course, it evolved and refined to something much greater. But we'll hear more about this greed of his. And then they're on their train to Harada Roshi's temple, Hoshinji, and Roshi Kaplow says to Nakagawa, do you really believe it's possible for me to get Satori during this session? Of course, provided you forget yourself completely. But what is Satori anyway? I mean, stop! Roshi threw up his hand, flashing his inscrutable smile. When you get it, you will know. Now, no more questions, please. Let us do Zazen and then try to get some sleep before we come to Hoshinji. And then he describes the opening ceremony of the Sesshin, where the monks' eyes were all glued to the floor in front of them, and none stirred to look at Harada Roshi when he spoke except me. And then here's Roshi Kaplow. Why is everybody so tense and grim? Why do they all look as though they're steeling themselves for some terrible ordeal? True, Roshi said this would be a battle, but surely that was only a figure of speech. How does one fight his own mind? Isn't Zen wu-wei, non-striving? This is stuff he'd picked up at Columbia. Isn't the all-embracing Buddha nature our common possession? So why strive to acquire what is already ours? Must ask Harada Roshi about this, first chance I get. December 1st, raining incessantly, Zendo uncomfortably cold and damp. Wore long johns and wool shirt and two sweaters and wool robe and two pairs of wool socks, but couldn't stop shivering. Godo is the Japanese word for monitor, had one of the monitors. Godo's bellowing and roaring, more of a distraction than his wallops with a kyosaku. Tortured by pain in legs and back, thoughts racing wildly, flopped from posture to posture, manipulating my three cushions in every conceivable way, but couldn't escape pain. And then Harada Roshi says, self-realization is not a matter of step-by-step progress, but the result of a leap. Until your mind is pure, you cannot make this leap. This point is especially salient now in Sesshin, because everyone here really is as close to awakening as they've ever been. This is it. This is the chance now. But we can't just do it step by step. There has to come a point where you have to go beyond yourself. You have to find a way to go beyond what you think you can do. A Chinese Zen master referred to it as this final burst of power. Otherwise, you get 99%, 99%, sesshin after sesshin. How? Don't dare ask how. That's what you have to figure out yourself. Not figure out. You have to find it within yourself to close that final gap. think this is now the second day of Sesshin. At 5 a.m., Doksan told Harada Roshi the pain in my legs was agonizing. I can't go on. Do you want a chair? He looked at me tauntingly. No, I won't use a chair, even if my legs drop off. Good. With that spirit, you're bound to become enlightened. Terrific whack by the Kyosaku, just when my concentration was beginning to gel, and I fell apart. Damn that Godo. Straighten your back. Sit firmly. Center your energy in your hara, he cries. How the devil do I put my energy into my hara? When I try, my back is stabbed with pain. Must ask Harada Roshi about this. Clang, clang, the Doksan bell. Harada Roshi listened impatiently, then roared, don't think of form or formlessness or anything else. You can imagine what Roshi Kapila was trotting in there to Doksan, the philosophical things he'd picked up under D.T. Suki. Think only mu. That's what you're here for. Third day of Sesshin. Pain in legs unbearable. Why don't I quit? Well, we know. He wouldn't quit because he needed to know. He'd gone too far. Come too far. It's called commitment. Commitment. Why don't I quit? It's imbecilic trying to sit with this gruesome pain and taking these senseless wallops of the Kyosaku, plus Godo's insane shouting. It's masochism, pure and simple. Why did I leave Rutakuji? Why did I ever leave the United States? But I can't quit now. What will I do? I must get Satori. I must. That's the biggest obstacle for him, of course, is that thought. What the devil is mu? What can it be? Wait, of course, it's absolute prayer. The self praying to itself. How often, as a student, had I wanted to pray, but somehow it had always seemed pointless and even silly to petition God for strength to cope with predicaments which He in His omniscience and omnipotence had allowed to arise in the first place. He had been a solid atheist until he got to Zen. Tears welling up. How blissful is prayer for its own sake? What do these tears mean? It's the only word he had for this experience of beginning to melt, this sense of devotion. It wasn't praying for something. It was this non-petitionary prayer. Tears welling up, how blissful is prayer for its own sake. What do these tears mean? They're a sign of my helplessness, a tacit admission that my intellect, my ego, has reached the limit of its power. Yes, tears are nature's benediction, her attempt to wash away the grime of ego and soften the harsh outlines of our personalities, made arid and tense through an egotistic reliance on the invincibility of reason. What marvelous insights. I feel so good about them. I know I've progressed. I won't be surprised if Satori hits me this very night. And then, crack, crack, stop dreaming. Only mu, cried the Godo, walloping me. Doksan. So apparently he brought Harada Roshi these insights. No, no, no. Didn't I tell you to concentrate simply on mu? Banish these thoughts. Satori is not a matter of progress or regress. Haven't I told you it's a leap? You are to do this and only this. Put your mind in the bottom of your belly and inhale and exhale mu. Is that clear? And then Roshi Kapo, why is he so harsh all of a sudden? Even the hawks in the screen behind him have begun to glower at me. Fourth day of Sesshin. My God, my Buddha, a chair is standing in my place. I am so grateful. Roshi came, that must be a Nakagawa Roshi, maybe he was in that same session. Roshi came and whispered, Harada Roshi ordered the head monk to give you a chair because he felt you would never get Satori sitting with a bent back and constantly shifting your position. Now you imagine how much they put up with him, with the shifting, the moving. They must have seen great promise in this neurotic, egotistical man. Now you have no obstacles, so concentrate on Mu with all your heart and soul. Concentration quickly tightened. Thoughts suddenly disappeared. What a marvelous feeling, this buoyant emptiness. Suddenly the sun streaming into the window in front of me. The rain's stopped. It's become warmer. At last the gods are with me. Now I can't miss Satori. He has to keep bringing in Satori. Mu, Mu, Mu. Again Roshi leaned over, but only to whisper, you are panting and disturbing the others. Try to breathe quietly. What a handful he was. But I can't stop. My heart's pumping wildly. I'm trembling from head to toe. Tears are streaming down uncontrollably. Goto cracks me, but I hardly feel it. He whacks my neighbor, and I suddenly think, why is he so mean? He's hurting him. More tears. Goto returns and clouts me again and again, shouting, empty your mind of every single thought. Become like a baby again. Just moo. Moo right from your guts. Crack, crack, crack. And then he faints. And he's carried out of the zendo by Nakagawa Roshi and one of the monks. And he comes around. And then that brings us to day five. I'm still aglow. Satori will hit me any moment now. I know it. I feel it in my marrow. Won't my Zen friends in the United States be envious when I write I have Satori? I don't know whether to laugh or cry at this. And then he to himself, don't think of Satori, you fool. Think only of Mu. Yes, Mu, Mu, Mu. Damn it, I've lost it. My excitement about Satori has triggered off hundreds of thoughts, which leave me dispirited. It's no use. Satori is beyond me. Day 6. Body tired this morning, but mind's sharp and clear. Mood in the monastery garden all night without sleep. Miserably cold. Stayed up only because at Dokusan, Harada Roshi had chided, you'll never open your mind's eye unless you develop the strength and determination to do Zazen all night. Some of the sitters have been up every single night in Zazen. And here I have to interject. You can come, you can at least get through your koan without sitting up all night. I have to say, full disclosure, plenty of people have done it. Now I see the old fox was hoaxing me, probably trying to pry me loose from my attachment to sleep. Shouting and clouting by the Goto and his assistants getting fiercer and fiercer, the din and tumult of the last 3 nights beyond belief. All but a handful of the 50-odd sitters have been bellowing Mu continuously during the last half hour while the head monks lambasted them, shouting, voice move from the bottom of your belly, not from the top of your lungs. And later, the shrill mooing throughout the night in the cemetery and the hills. At Dokusan, I told Harada Roshi, the trouble is I can't forget myself. I'm always aware of myself as subject, confronting Mu as object. I focus my mind on Mu, and when I can hang on to it, I think, good, now you've got it, don't let go. Then I tell myself, no, you mustn't think good, you must think only Mu. So I clench my hands, bear down with every nerve and muscle, and eventually something clicks. I know I've reached a deeper level of consciousness because no longer am I aware of inside or out, front or back. Exhilarated, I think, now I'm getting close to Satori. Every thought's vanished. Satori will hit me any moment. But then I realize, okay, he's got a learning curve. I can't be close to Satori as long as I'm still thinking of it. So discouraged, my hold on Mu loosens and Mu's gone again. Then I have this problem. You've told me to make my mind as barren of preconceptions as an infant's with no self, will, or ego. But how can I be free of ego when the Godo cracks me furiously and urges me to strive harder and harder and to bear down on Mu? Isn't such purposeful striving on my part an expression of ego? Instead of banishing ego, it seems to me I'm bolstering it. And then Harada Roshi, the mind of ego and the mind of purity are two sides of the same reality. Don't think this is ego. This is not ego. Just concentrate on Mu. That's the way to realize the mind of purity. That's the problem with using a word like ego. It becomes this kind of Satan. In a way, reinforces this illusion that there's somebody there, that ego is a thing. It's just a word we have for a certain pattern of thoughts and a certain self-image. But there's nothing to it. Don't try to anticipate Satori. It comes unexpectedly. When your mind is emptied of every thought and image, anything can enlighten it. The human voice, the call of a bird. But you must have stronger faith. You must believe you have the capacity to realize your true nature. And you must believe that what I'm telling you is true and it will lead to what you seek. Doksan with the old lions, always a shot in the arm. So once again, charged into Mu, quickly exhausted my energies and got struck not by Satori, but by a barrage of thoughts. I'm stymied. If I push hard, I soon tire and my body and mind wilt. But if I don't dig in, Godo whacks me or else yanks me off my seat and shoves me into Doksan. When I appear before Harada Roshi, he asks, "Why do you come when you can't show me Mu?" Or else he bawls me out for my half-heartedness. Why don't I quit? Crash, bang, the whole Zendo is shaking. What's happened? I shouldn't have, but I turned my head to see. The old lion has just broken the longest stick in the Zendo across the back of Manjusri's altar. "You're all lazy," he yells. "You have within your grasp the most precious experience in the world, yet you sit dreaming. Wake up and throw your lives into the struggle. Otherwise, Satori will elude you forever." The last day of Sesshin, too exhausted to sit up with the others, too exhausted to sit up with the others last night, might just as well have, though, their raucous mooing throughout the night kept me awake anyway. Roshi says this last day is crucial and not to weaken. But my do-or-die spirit's gone. The race is over, and I'm just an also-ran. And then you remember that reference earlier to his neighbor, the guy sitting next to him, crying and the Godo striking him. He said one of the fortunate ones, the ones who had awakened, had sat next to me. He'd been struck repeatedly and had blubbered all of yesterday and today. Evidently, he'd been crying from sheer joy when all along I imagined he was in pain. And then, back in Kyoto, tired, frozen, half-frozen, and sore, but inwardly alive. Who can't remember that feeling post-sesshin? Indescribable. And then he fast-forwards to 3 years later. Every one of my allergies has disappeared. My stomach pains me only occasionally. I sleep well. The dark fears which formerly haunted me, my cherished dreams and hopes, all these have withered away, leaving me lighter and with a clearer sense of the real. But I'm still the hungry dog next to the tank of boiling fat that is Satori. I can't taste it, and I can't leave it. And then he switches teachers, and he goes to another part of Japan to train under Yasutani Roshi, who he had been told had a very different style of sesshin. I would say more like ours, with all that severe martial, heavy use of the stick and so forth. What a huge relief not to be driven by a savage kyosaku or verbally belted by the roshi at Doksan. The manual work after breakfast is stimulating and the afternoon bath immensely soothing. He had told me that the only time he could ever get warm in Japan was in the bath. Am completely at ease with Yasutani Roshi. His manners, gentle yet penetrating. He laughs easily and often. We're now to 1958. It's 5 years after he got there. August 1st is my D-Day, the start of a one-week summer sesshin, my 20th with Yasutani Roshi. Sat two sesshin this month, one at Yasutani Roshi's temple and one at Ryutakuji, besides day and night zazen in my own room, all in preparation for this big push. Notice that. He now had dialed up his sitting to actually have gone to two sesshins before this one. My mind has a rare clarity and incisiveness. I will break through. For the first time, I'm truly convinced I can. And then the day three, I'm skipping around, of course. Animatedly, the Roshi warned, "You are now facing the last and toughest barrier between you and self-realization. This is the time one feels, in the words of an ancient master, as though he were a mosquito attacking an iron bowl. But you must bore tirelessly. Come what may, don't let go of Mu. Do zazen all night if you feel you may lose Mu in your sleep." Mooed silently in temple garden till clock struck one. Rose to exercise stiff, aching legs, staggered into a nearby fence. Suddenly I realized the fence and I are one formless wood and flesh Mu. Of course. Vastly energized by this, pushed on till the 4 a.m. gong. Next day, or 2 days later, threw myself into Mu for another 9 hours with such utter absorption that I completely vanished. I didn't eat breakfast, Mu did. I didn't sweep and wash the floors after breakfast, Mu did. I didn't eat lunch, Mu ate. Once or twice, ideas of Satori started to rear their heads, but Mu promptly chopped them off. afternoon Doksan. Hawk-like, the Roshi scrutinized me as I entered his room, walked toward him, prostrated myself, and sat before him with my mind alert and exhilarated. "The universe is one," he began, each word tearing into my mind like a bullet. "The moon of truth," all at once, the Roshi, the room, every single thing disappeared in a dazzling stream of illumination, and I felt myself bathed in a delicious, unspeakable delight. For a fleeting eternity, I was alone. I alone was. Then the Roshi swam into view. Our eyes met and flowed into each other, and we burst out laughing. Return to the main hall. As I slipped back into my place, Grandmother Yamaguchi, this is a, he mentioned earlier, a 68-year-old grandmother, Godo, the head monitor, a part-time Godo, tiptoed over to me with eyes aglow and whispered, "Wonderful, isn't it? I'm so happy for you." I resumed my zazen, laughing, sobbing, and muttering to myself. It was before me all the time, yet it took me 5 years to see it. A line Tangen San had once quoted me rang in my ears. Sometimes, even in the driest hole, one can find water. I would say always in the driest hole, in any hole, there's water to be found. August 9th, 1958. Feel free as a fish swimming in an ocean of cool, clear water after being stuck in a tank of glue. And so grateful. Grateful for everything that has happened to me. Grateful to everyone who encouraged and sustained me in spite of my immature personality and stubborn nature. That's the end of his account. And just a few final words. Just a matter of faith and with it doubt, questioning. That's the three: faith, doubt, determination. If there's enough faith and enough questioning, the determination will be there to close the deal. There's a Japanese proverb: if the bow is drawn hard enough, the arrow can pierce anything. At this stage of Sesshin, whatever obstructions you may encounter, mental, of course, mental obstructions, don't take it as anything to be concerned about. It's just a passing obstruction. Some little trick of the mind. With every passing hour, we're in a more dynamic state. Things can change more abruptly as we go on from here to the end of Sesshin. So it's just an endless possibility for change and opening, turning about, everything suddenly changing. Time is up now. We'll stop and recite the four vows. All beings without number,
I bow to the great endless divine passion. I bow to above root, dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the direct way of Buddha. I bow to attain.